My name is Virginia Farr, and I am from the College of St. Catherine in St. Paul, Minnesota. And it is my privilege this afternoon to spend time with you and with our guests, speaking about church as worshiping community. And we have three people who know this very well. The first is Christine Smith, Chris Smith, Virginia Ramey Mollenkott, and Ophelia Ortega. Welcome. Each one of the presenters will speak for 20 to 30 minutes per individual presentation. At the end of the time, we are going to take questions, and we have yellow cards that will be passed out. If you would please address your question to the person from whom you would like to hear an answer, or perhaps you would like to hear all of their answers. Time will run out, I assure you. As we have done in the other sessions, we are beginning with a story about each one of the presenters, and I would like to begin with a story about Chris Smith. Here in Minnesota, in the last two or three years, as I think is probably true about the rest of the country, the Texas two-step and line dancing became all the rage. And we all raced out and we bought boots and jeans and belts with those beautiful buckles. And we took two-step lessons and line dance lessons. There was an evening when a group went out to do some two-stepping and line dancing. And a gentleman came up and asked Chris, "Would you like to dance?" She said, "Sure I would, but I only lead."
That is very good.
Excellent.
Please help me welcome Chris Smith.
Trying to figure out if there's a way to get this light on. Does anybody know? Sorry about that. I just didn't. Well, that's okay. That's all right. Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Slightly embarrassed by that story, but also kind of tickled by it as well. So. A poem by Mae Sarton. Fragile as a spider's web, hanging in space between tall grasses, it is torn again and again. A passing dog or simply the wind may do it. Several times a day I gather myself together and spin it again. Spiders are patient weavers. They never give up. And who knows what keeps them at it? Hunger, no doubt, and hope. Many of us have been told throughout our lives of faith that worship is for the purpose of praising God. We acknowledge and celebrate God's presence and power in our lives and in the life of our world by the prayers we pray, by the songs we sing, by the words we proclaim, the litanies we recite, the confessions we speak, and the offerings we bring. I believe this is all important and true. I also believe that this is not a full enough, human enough, honest enough expression or explanation or description of why people worship and who they are as they gather to do this ancient and contemporary act. We are a people who praise, but we are also a people who hunger and hope. We hunger and hope for a just world, a meaningful and invested life, mutual relationships, a full sense of sexuality, reassurance that we are not alone, safety to be exactly who we are, a day when all people share in the abundance of creation, a touch of the holy, a moment of hallowed time, sacred divine presence. I have come to believe that perhaps the most powerful, meaningful worship experiences these days, and perhaps throughout time, emerge from within communities that are absolutely clear and unapologetically honest about their own hungers and hopes. In an essay that suggests that all effective movements for social change must ultimately find ways to unite the spiritual and the material dimensions of life, Shri Maraga simply and poignantly suggests that we must be about the work of feeding people in all their hungers. What would it mean for us to reimagine the worshiping community as a community utterly committed to feeding people in all their hungers? How might it transform our individual and communal lives if we really believe that when we are feeding people in all their hungers, all our hungers, we then in those very acts are praising and incarnating God? In recent years, I've been working and living with three primary metaphors for preaching that also might be metaphors that could guide the creation of new and vital worshiping communities. These metaphors are weeping, confession, and resistance. I believe that people hunger and long for safe places where passionate human weeping is accepted, encouraged, and honored. Places where human beings can feel the pain of their own lives keenly and be helped and challenged to connect that pain to the larger pains of neighborhoods, cities, countries, and globe. Places where the tears of weeping have the potential of turning into rivers of possibility and hope. When I reimagine the worshiping community as a place of passionate weeping, I image my own church, Spirit of the Lakes, United Church of Christ, here in Minneapolis. As a church community, it was birthed 5 years ago as a church that would particularly serve and respond to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community. The place of worship is a large warehouse that has been transformed into holy space by all the hungers and the hopes people bring. In this place, weeping is a common and holy thing. I sit Sunday after Sunday as a lesbian woman and am overwhelmed by what I see and feel. Everywhere I look, there are people crying, sometimes out of deep personal loss, sometimes out of passionate connection to the hurts of our world, sometimes out of profound joy and celebration, and sometimes, perhaps many times, simply because for gay men, lesbian women, bisexual and transgender people, we have never known even for a moment places and moments where the grace of the church, God, love, and sexuality all come together in a moment. We sit there together holding each other's hungers and each other's tears, each other's hopes, and in that act, I believe we offer God our greatest praise. But this is only part of the weeping that happens at Spirit of the Lakes. Each and every Sunday, this group of people who are despised and hated by so much of the world, these individual Christian men and women who are marginalized and oppressed by most of Christendom, stand in long processional lines waiting to come to the table to partake of the bread of life and the cup of blessing. Here is faithfulness, a yearning, a fidelity that is worthy of passionate weeping. Yet here is not a weeping that is turned inward. Each time that we break this bread, we say these words and participate in the cup. We say these words before we commune. Each time that we break this bread, we participate in the body of the risen Christ, for we are the body of the risen Christ. And each time we share this cup, we participate in the new community, for we are God's hope for the new community. This is powerful reimagining. Those who are deemed unacceptable are given the mandate to shape and embody the new community. Those who are seldom fed by the traditional church are urged and invited, in fact, to be the church. And after we eat, people are embraced and a blessing is spoken to every individual, every couple, every grouping, every family that so desires that blessing. Those who feel condemnation at every turn of their lives are offered special blessing in this place. This is worship, a weeping moment when hunger and hope come together. Worshiping communities hunger for passionate weeping. We also hunger for confession, moments in our common life when we can speak honestly and truthfully about our own lives and the realities of the world. Hope is not engendered by illusions or lies. Hope is engendered by truth. Might it be possible for worship to be, thank you, to be a time to speak the truth about life, as devastatingly ugly and as frighteningly beautiful as it is, and to bring that truth to be offered and blessed and transformed by God and one another in those sacred acts of worship. This kind of confession could heal, confront, and enliven us, I think, in ways that we can hardly comprehend. When I reimagine the worshiping community as a place of confession and truth-telling, I image a quiet, sacred moment in the living room of two friends just last June.